listening to the teaching ministry of Uxbridge Baptist Church. If you would like to learn more about how we can be of service to you, please visit us at www.uxbridgebaptist.com.
So it's an absolute privilege for me to be able to introduce to you Steve Jones. Steve and I go back probably, is it 12 years? Probably about 12 years. When I served at in Omimi, Rayburn Omimi Baptist Church for 10 years, Steve and Life 100.3 helped us out huge with our youth ministry and with all ministry up there. And the first time he ever preached was at Omimi Baptist Church. So it's a privilege to have you here today. There's a bio there that you guys can read, and I just want to say, may God bless you, anoint your heart, your tongue, your words, your lips as you come and share the gospel this morning. God bless you.
Thank you so much, Pastor Kathy. It really is an honor to be with you this morning. We're big fans, like I said earlier. We really believe we're an extension of what you do. You hear the messages from your pastors and the encouragement on Sundays, and then when you turn on the radio, we hope that we're encouraging you to take those messages and live them out throughout the week. So that's kind of why we exist. So we're thankful to just play a small part in what you're already doing. Just to give you a little bit of a background, I've been at Life for almost 13 years. It'll be August 11th is my anniversary, and I showed up at Life as a single man with all of my personal belongings packed up in my 1997 Ford Escort. And since that time, I have met and married my wife, Shauna. We've been married for 9 years, and we have two children. Aiden is 5 and a half. Leah is 2 and a half, and you can see them right there. Sorry, quality's not great. Also, we have a dog, Maisie. We got her last summer. So now maybe you're saying, last summer, wouldn't she be like a year old now? Yes, that's true. But if you've never tried to get a 5-year-old and a 2-year-old and a puppy to hold still for one picture, you'll realize why we don't have an updated picture of that one. And this is kind of what's normal in our house. So well-behaved children for sure, but every once in a while we get a piece of meat on foreheads. So that's just kind of how life is in our household. So thank you so much. Just a little bit of a background on me. I'm a little bit embarrassed to admit that I've avoided reading the Old Testament in the past. And you're saying, Steve, the Old Testament is a part of the Bible. Yes, but don't get me wrong. I'm shocked that Hollywood hasn't started to take more of an interest in the stories. Like, think about it. You've got Noah's Ark, the story of creation, Adam and Eve, Abraham almost sacrificed his son Isaac, Daniel in the lion's den, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, the life of David. You could have 25 stories just on the life of David. Jonah and the whale. So up until this point, I usually have just read the Old Testament for context, but there are some fascinating and exciting stories that help explain what comes later in the New Testament, but there's a lot of names and family history and stuff that I just found difficult to dig into. But as I've been reading lately, some new thoughts have been jumping off of the page. And today I'd like to dig into the book of Exodus and look at one of the many life-changing moments in the life of Moses. And let's begin reading in chapter 4, verse 1, if you have your Bible or you can follow along on the screen. Exodus chapter 4, verse 1. We're going to read a long passage, and I just want to read a lot just so it can provide context of the whole story. Exodus chapter 4, beginning at verse 1. Moses answered, "What if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, 'The Lord did not appear to you'? Then the Lord said to them, 'What is that in your hand?' 'A staff,' he replied. The Lord said, 'Throw it on the ground.' Moses threw it on the ground, and it became a snake, and he ran from it. Then the Lord said to him, 'Reach out your hand and take it by the tail.' So Moses reached out and took hold of the snake, and it turned back into a staff in his hand. 'This,' said the Lord, 'is so that they may believe that the Lord, the God of their fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, has appeared to you.' Then the Lord said, 'Put your hand inside your cloak.' So Moses put his hand into his cloak, and when he took it out, the skin was leprous. It had become white as snow. 'Now, put it back into your cloak,' he said. So Moses put his hand back into his cloak, and when he took it out, it was restored, like the rest of his flesh. Then the Lord said, if they do not believe you or pay attention to the first sign, they may believe the second. But if they do not believe these two signs or listen to you, take some water from the Nile, pour it on the dry ground. The water you take from the river will become blood on the ground. Moses said to the Lord, pardon your servant, Lord. I've never been eloquent, neither in the past nor since you have spoken to your servant. I'm slow of speech and tongue. The Lord said to him, who gave human beings their mouths? Who makes them deaf or mute? Who gives them sight or makes them blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now go, I will help you speak and will teach you what to say. But Moses said, pardon your servant, Lord. Please send someone else. Then the Lord's anger burned against Moses, and he said, what about your brother, Aaron the Levite? I know he can speak well. He is already on his way to meet you, and he will be glad to see you. You shall speak to him and put words in his mouth, and I will help both of you speak and will teach you what to do. He will speak to the people for you, and it will be as if he were your mouth and as if you were God to him. But take this staff in your hand so that you can perform the signs with it. Then Moses went back to Jethro, his father-in-law, and said to him, let me return to my own people in Egypt to see if any of them are still alive. Jethro said, go, and I wish you well. Now the Lord had said to Moses in Midian, go back to Egypt, for all those who wanted to kill you are dead. So Moses took his wife and sons, put them on a donkey, and started back to Egypt. And he took the staff of God in his hand. The Lord said to Moses, when you return to Egypt, see that you perform before Pharaoh all the wonders I have given you the power to do, but I will harden his heart so that he will not let the people go. In a quick summary, we just read about how God was trying to convince Moses to lead the people out of Egypt. But Moses was coming up with every excuse in the book. The verse that grabbed my attention was the last one, verse 21. The Lord said to Moses, when you return to Egypt, see that you perform before Pharaoh all the wonders I have given you the power to do, but I will harden his heart so that he will not let the people go. Here we have Moses coming up with every excuse in the book not to go to Egypt, and God says, go anyway. But even crazier than that, God tells him, go, but the answer will be no, but go anyway. Does that sound strange to you? If God knows Pharaoh will say no, why does he send Moses anyway? I'm originally from Saskatchewan, and I attended the University of Saskatchewan, and one of my classes was led by a guy named Jeff Parker. I had never met the man before, but our relationship was about to change. I want you to picture this. We're in our first day of a new semester in class, and there were 50 of us. That was give or take 50, 60. And have you ever played one of those crowd breaker games to get to know each other a bit better? So you're in this big room, nobody really knows anybody, so you play one of these crowd breakers. So it's kind of like, okay, I want you to find somebody in the room who has the same first letter in their name as you do in your name. So it's, hi, I'm Steve. Hi, I'm Andy. Oh, not a match. Next person, hi, I'm Steve. Hi, I'm Sandy. Hey, we're a match. So you exchange some pleasantries, get to know them a little bit better. How many people love playing those kind of games? Hands up. How many people say, wow, what a great time for a bathroom break when there's one of those? All right, so there's a few of us who agree on that one. So here we are. We're in this class, and Jeff, our professor, wanted to make our class a little bit smaller by helping us get to know each other's name. That was the bottom line. So he started at the opposite end of the class. Now, I should say, when I say opposite, I'm sitting in the back row on this side of the class. He starts in the front row on that side of the class, okay? So he says to the first girl, hey, why don't you tell everybody your name? And then he says to the girl behind her, okay, what's your name? And she says her name. Now, the next step is what changed my life forever. Because Jeff asked the second girl what the first girl's name was. See, some of you are already jumping ahead, aren't you? All right. So I was getting stressed out just from this moment. So if you picture this, if you're not catching on, so 1, 2, 3, Steve, number 50. So I have to remember 49 names before he gets to me. How in the world am I going to do this? And I was getting so stressed out. And I'm in the opposite corner, and I'm thinking, 49 names? How am I going to do this? This is crazy. Why did I ever come into this class? This is nuts. And then I just hear my name, just kind of Steve. And it's Jeff. And I look up, and Jeff is looking right at me, and so is the rest of the class. And then I hear Jeff say, okay, Steve, what are their names? And I just freeze. He wanted to me to name the three girls who had just said their name. So he did the first three and then jumped to me. And I had been so busy worrying about having to remember 49 names that I hadn't even thought of paying attention to the three people who had mentioned their names. And I said, listen, I apologize. I was daydreaming a little bit, and I just can't remember the names. Can you say them again? And Jeff asked, well, can't you name just one? I'm like, I'm sorry. I wasn't really paying attention. I can't name one. So needless to say, the class giggled a little bit. And so Jeff says, okay, for Steve's benefit, I want you to say your names again. So the three girls start talking, and I'm beating myself up. I'm like, man, I can't believe I didn't know these names. I just had to name three, not 49. And then all of a sudden, see, you know where this is going. Steve, Steve. And I'm like, yes. And I look up, and now the class is looking at me again. And he goes, okay, they said their names over again. What are they? And I'm frozen. I'm sorry. I wasn't paying attention again. And as you can imagine, the class is doing more than just giggling now. They're just kind of laughing. He's like, you can't name one. So I'm like, oh my goodness, I can't believe I fell for that two times in a row. And he's like, okay, Steve, for your benefit, we're going to get them to say their names again. So you know where this is going. Again, I'm kicking myself. Why didn't I pay attention? Why didn't I? And Steve, Steve. So finally, for like the third time, I could not name one name. So finally, I'm paying attention. I'm able to do it. And by this point, you got to imagine, Jeff and the class are just dying laughing. They look like they're going to cry because I can't name one name. But finally, he gave me one more try. I was able to do it. And in case you're wondering right now, I still have no idea what their names were. You'd think I would have remembered after such a life-changing experience. But I just thought I'd let you know in case you come to me after at the booth and say, hey, Steve, what are their names? Can't do it. It's kind of crazy because if I had just trusted, if I had just listened and forgot about my worries and fears, and did what Jeff had asked me to do the first time, I would have had a much more relaxing first day of class. But like so many of us, I had to learn the hard way, just like Moses. When I look at this time in the life of Moses, this is what I think we can apply to our own lives. Number one, God is always thinking big picture. We may not think he's in control, but he is. Number two, God sees our potential even when we can't. And number three, he is God, we are not, and he knows that. Remember when Peter stepped out of the boat and he walked on water? He had no problem walking on the water until he took his eyes off of Jesus. As soon as he did that, he started to sink. But Jesus didn't let him down. He didn't let him drown. He reached out his hand, took Peter's hand. He's always willing to reach out his hand when we are sinking, when we don't think we can make it through life's challenges. Let's get back to Exodus chapter 4, verse 21. So we already know that Pharaoh has evil intentions. We know that he wants to punish the Israelites. So I'll ask the question again. If God knows Pharaoh will say no, why does he send Moses anyway? And I've always interpreted this story to be about Pharaoh and his wicked ways. We certainly have a lot of information to back up that story. Here's just a bit of an aside. What if we thought just about the bricks and the straw? Do you remember that part? Moses and Aaron asked Pharaoh to let his people go, but he didn't just say no, but he made life even worse for the Israelites. Back then, the bricks were made of mud, and to make them stronger, they added straw. But it wasn't the straw that gave the bricks the strength. When the straw is mixed with the clay, it releases an acid that makes the bricks smoother for building. So to make life more difficult for the Israelites, Pharaoh stopped providing the straw. He made the Israelites go into the field, grab the straw left behind from the harvest. To make matters worse, they had to keep the same quota for making bricks, even though they were losing time searching the fields for these pieces of straw. So it's safe to say that Pharaoh was an evil guy. He didn't even make any sense. No one in their right mind would demand such a crazy task. It wasn't efficient for building, but maybe, visit after visit, miracle after miracle, it was not about convincing Pharaoh to let the Israelites go, but it was about convincing Moses. Remember, Moses was at the burning bush? And I'm always fascinated by this story, because what if this happened today? Let's say you get home after a long day of work, you pull into the driveway, and your tree is on fire. So you call the fire department, and they make sure everybody's okay, and then they point the hose at the fire for, let's say, 2 hours. But it's still burning, and the tree is fine. So the fire chief looks at you, scratches his head, and says, "Hey, listen, you know, I've been fighting fires for 35 years. It's never happened before. First one that's burned for 2 hours without burning anything. So I'm not sure what else to do. We're just going to go home. Good luck with that." I'd like to think that if my tree was on fire, the fire department left, and then God started to speak to me, that I would listen and do whatever he told me to do. I'd never doubt God again. But even though God was speaking to Moses in a bush, you'd think that would be convincing enough, but Moses didn't think he was worthy to lead the Israelites out of Egypt. We're going to jump around chapter 4 just a little bit, but let's pick it up in verse 1. Moses answered, "What if they do not believe me or listen to me and say, 'The Lord did not appear to you?'" God then reassures Moses in the next few verses and says, "Listen, if they don't believe me, throw your staff down, let it turn into a snake, pick it up, it's back as a staff. Put your hand in your cloak, pull it out, it's leprous. Put it back in, it's healed. Pour water on the Nile, from the Nile on the ground, it'll turn to blood." And God says, "Okay, there you have it, three signs. Now they'll believe you for sure." But in verse 10, Moses said, "Hey, pardon your servant, Lord. I've never been so eloquent, either in the past, nor since you have spoken to your servant. I'm slow of speech and tongue." Back in chapter 3, Moses also had doubts. But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" Verse 13, "Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you,' and they ask, 'What's his name?' Then what should I tell them?" It was because of all of these questions that I started to think that this process with Pharaoh was less about Pharaoh and more about Moses. Why? Because Moses just wasn't ready, at least according to Moses. He wasn't convinced that the Israelites could trust his leadership and would trust his leadership. He didn't even think he was a good speaker. He doubted God, even though God already believed in him and gave him proof with these signs. When was the last time you felt like God asked you to do something, but you didn't feel like you were worthy? Was it a new position at work? Did your pastor ask you to do something? Take on some new responsibilities at church? Believe it or not, many of us are more like Moses than we think. Before we ask God to give us strength, we already feel defeated. We already know that we're not qualified to lead that small group. We're too shy to be a greeter at church. You're not a people person, so you probably shouldn't take that management position at work. You're too young. You're too old. You're too short. You're too tall. Remember, the life of Moses started to change when the princess found him in a basket in the water. That's pretty young. He didn't get called to lead the people out of Israel until he was 80. I know this is a lot to digest, especially if you've never thought of the story of Moses from this perspective. And I struggled with it too. That's one of the reasons that I love having Life 100.3. I know I work there, so I'm supposed to say that, but believe it or not, life ministers to me too. And I want to do a little bit of an exercise this morning, if that's okay. Don't worry, it won't involve remembering names, all right? That's mostly for my benefit, just in case you're wondering. You don't need to answer this out loud, but I want you to think of three things that you know you're not very good at. I know you're thinking, "Steve, thanks for the encouragement. Appreciate that." Okay, do you have any? Okay, now I want you to think of three things that you are very good at. If you're having trouble with this one, you're not alone. Most of us spend more time thinking about what has gone wrong in our lives than what God can do with our lives. When you were born, you were created for this moment. And I want you to know that God is not finished with you yet. It doesn't matter if you're 8 or 88. God is still at work in you. And sometimes he needs to take some time, like he did with Moses, to convince us that through him, we can do great things. It's tough because we naturally want to do things in our own strength, but that's not how it's meant to be. Did you ever think of this? Perhaps God knew that Moses wasn't ready to part the Red Sea yet. So to give Moses the opportunity to strengthen his faith, God kept sending him back to Pharaoh with plague after plague. Remember, Pharaoh's heart was already hard. It really only would take one time. But it was Moses who was holding up the process. Once he let go of all of his insecurities, gave them back to God, with each visit, the faith of Moses grew. I wonder what great things God has planned for you. I wonder what trials and struggles that you have been walking through that God is using to prepare you for some amazing things. When I was in that university class with Jeff, the problem was not with the exercise of remembering names. The problem was me getting distracted by all of my insecurities and fears. But Jeff believed enough in me to keep coming back again and again. And that was just a silly class. Maybe you feel a little bit like Moses did. You look at everyone else and don't feel like you measure up. Everybody else has so many things that God could do with them. But me, not so much. You feel you're not good enough. You only see your imperfections. You just don't feel qualified to do what he is asking. Maybe it's your past. Because of everything you've done wrong, God won't be able to use somebody like you. But that's not the way God works. In fact, he seems to work with the broken, the insecure, the discouraged, the outcasts, almost exclusively. You've probably seen this graphic before. It's floated around the internet for a while, but I thought it's such a good reminder. Jacob was a cheater. Peter had a temper. David had an affair. Noah got drunk. Jonah ran from God. Paul was a murderer. Gideon was insecure. Miriam was a gossip. Martha was a worrier. Thomas was a doubter. Sarah was impatient. Elijah was moody. Moses stuttered. Zacchaeus was short. Abraham was old. Lazarus was dead. I think that covers all of us. Once we realize and accept that our own strength and abilities may never be good enough, and we trust that God is in control, he might just be able to help you part your own Red Sea. I'd like to wrap up with a song that we play on Life by Danny Gokey, More Than You Think I Am. Just to give you a little bit of a background on Danny, he was, I think he placed number 3 or number 4 in one of the seasons of American Idol. And he was never supposed to go to his audition because his first wife died. She was supposed to go in for a routine heart surgery, and they knew she was very, very sick. And she said, no, I really think you should go to this audition. And he said, I don't know, because you're not doing very well. And she said, hey, just, I really think you're supposed to go. And she ended up dying. And he really struggled with this. Even though he did very well on American Idol, he really struggled with this. Did I do the right thing? And then all of a sudden it hit him. He said this whole world that's opened up to him, this exposure that he got on American Idol, which led to a couple of recording contracts, first in country music, and now he's had a couple of albums in Christian music. And he said, none of this would have happened had I not followed God's prompting to get on this show. So the video I want to show you is from David Gokey, More Than You Think I Am. It's a lyrical video, so you can listen to the song and follow along, or just relax and soak up the message of the song. I believe that we all have our Moses moments when we feel like we're not good enough. We feel like God could and probably should find somebody better. But he has chosen you to do great things. I really believe that. God has chosen you, each one of us. He's chosen us to do great things. God is bigger, and he can accomplish more in your life than you can ever imagine. This song is written from God's perspective. What would he want you to remember as you leave the service today?